Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Season of Sports with me, Yasmir Begovic. Just finished a great training session and come down here to Hope FM to record the latest episode of this podcast. Joining me, as always, is Rachel Humphreys. Rachel, how are you?
I'm great, Yasmir. It's great to be back in the studio. It's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah. I mean, we've been out to Twickenham. We've had some field trips there, watching the NFL. We've had a good time there, actually. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was so much fun that at the end of the game, you had to leave. And I went into the locker room, which was quite something.
Yeah, that's pretty big, huh?
Quite a lot of naked NFL players, let's put it that way. But anyway, there's lots more on the show.
But listen, I'm glad you enjoyed your first NFL experience. We'll be there again next year. Can't wait for it again. So we've got an amazing show lined up. Really excited about it all. Colin Murray is joining us.
Woo-hoo.
Yep, he's
big
a great
fan.
Guy, good friend of mine. Pretty much everywhere in the world of media at the moment. So he's doing lots of stuff, and he's going to come talk to us about some football, some baseball. We'll also be touching on fantasy football with the FPL General, aka Mark. He's going to give us some updates. But before we get into our guests, I wanted to get into my roundup of the most recent sporting events, as always. Hi, guys. Why not head to my official online store now? Shop at asmir1.com to check out the official AB1 leisurewear line, as well as some goalkeeping products. Use the code SOS for 10% discount of all products on our website. Also, make sure you follow our social media pages for regular updates and to keep up with the latest products. Thank you guys for your support, as always. I want to touch on the NBA. Season's in full swing, five weeks now. Things to take away from there would be the amazing play of the Boston Celtics. I'm happy to admit when I was wrong and I wasn't quite sure how good this team was going to be, especially with the injury to Gordon Hayward, and they've been incredible to start really well. Their coach, Brad Stevens, is a coach of a different level. He's been amazing. The Cavaliers obviously got off to a slow start, but they seem to be hitting their stride. They'll only get better as the season goes on and their relationships build. And Isaiah Thomas comes back. OKC, the big three of Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, and obviously Russell Westbrook are taking a bit of time. They've come up with a really slow start. But once again, I expect them to be much better as the season goes on. And my Phoenix Suns, the first team to fire their coach.
Not a good start, is it?
Yeah, in the first week of the season, had to be done after the first few performances. But things have looked a little bit better since then.
Do you think that was the right decision?
It looked that way. I hate when coaches get fired. Things like that happen in sports, unfortunately. But it seemed that the team wasn't responding to him, to Earl Watson, and a change had to be made. Jay Triano's come in. They've also traded away one of the best players in Eric Bledsoe, which is not ideal. So it's been a less than ideal first month for Phoenix. But that trade had to happen. Obviously, he wanted to get out of town. And I think at the end of the day, with the two picks and a free agent in Craig Monroe at the end of the year, that's the best sort of return they can get. So it's been a lively start for Phoenix and generally in the NBA, as always. And moving on to the NFL, that's obviously heating up nicely.
Well, halfway through the season now, right?
Over halfway. Yeah, just over halfway. Teams obviously starting now to separate themselves. You can see the top team, especially in the AFC, my Patriots, 7-2, which is amazing, as always. The Pittsburgh Steelers are up there. So they will be the two best teams, I think, in the AFC. And then the NFC is actually getting really interesting because I think they have a lot of good teams. The LA Rams have been incredible. The New Orleans Saints, Minnesota Vikings. But the cream of the crop, I would say, is the Philadelphia Eagles at the moment. Carson Wentz playing an MVP level and just been so impressive with what he's been able to do. So, yeah, I can't wait for the next couple of months of NFL action, the rest of the regular season before we enter in the playoffs.
And I think we've got some NFL questions coming up in the huddle at the end of
the
show.
I hope so.
Yeah, so if you tweeted us, stay with us because your question may well be coming to Asmir at the end of the program.
Yeah. And anything that's caught your eye recently, Rachel?
Well, we've had the, in women's sport, the women's England team are currently battling in the Ashes series in Australia, which is, it's pretty tight. I mean, the 2020 game's currently underway and England have to win all of those if they have even a chance of regaining the trophy. But one story that has caught my eye today, actually, Asmir, it's a really small story in the world of football. I don't know if you've ever had a game sort of curtailed because of a poor pitch. You played on some poor pitches in your time?
I've played on a few poor pitches, yes.
Have you ever played on a pitch that has been dug up by badgers?
No, that would be a first if that happened.
So Dudley Town FC's home games, this was last week, had to be cancelled after Badgers chewed the turf and they said that the surface was unplayable.
Yeah.
But Badgers are a protected species. So I don't know what they're going to do about it. So maybe by the time this goes to air, I hope that Dudley FC have found a resolve. But at the moment, it's ruining the game.
Well, that's tough. I actually played on a pitch in Sarajevo in the last game against Belgium that might have been dug up by Badgers. So maybe secretly they've been spreading.
Badgers are around. I mean, it's seriously though, it must be problematic, especially as a goalie. You know, you need to have the pitch to be just on point, right?
Yeah, our job's hard enough as it is, so we don't need any any unexpected bobbles or bounces to go our way. So
yeah, you don't want any Badger sets to trip up in or anything like that.
No, so I hope they get it sorted at Dudley.
But yeah, that's my update for weird sports news this week.
Very cool. So we're going to get into our guest, Colin Murray, and the FPL General, and then we'll finish it up with our usual huddle. So I'm very excited to introduce our next guest on the Season of Sports here, a very good friend of mine, person I look up to very much, especially in the world of media and the world of sports. He is the presenter of Fighting Talk on BBC Radio 5 Live, presents snooker on Eurosport, talks football on the Football League show on Channel 5 Saturday nights. He is a Metro newspaper columnist. He's basically everywhere. Colin Murray, welcome to the show, buddy.
How are you doing, my friend? What an intro that was.
Did I miss anything?
Listen,
no.
I think you've got just about it all. I'd like to return the favour by saying you are a fine human being, but you're like, do you know when you've got a friend and he's great fun, he'll do anything for you, but he has one flaw, like he starts fights in the night out. That's how I describe you. You're almost perfect, and then you find out you're a Yankees fan. And that it's just that one little, if I could change that one thing about you, you would be perfect.
Yeah, I know. We've had you brought it up before, actually. Unfortunately, my loyalty to my baseball team is very, very important to me, so I can't let that go. But yeah, it's great to have you on, and we're going to get into some baseball talk in a minute. I know you love your baseball just as much as I do, and we've had an amazing season over stateside. But, you know, there's only one place to start, and unfortunately, I'm going to have to bring up the Northern Ireland games against Switzerland. I know you were with the team. I know you were around the team and around the games, of course. You know, I would be so proud to be a Northern Irishman and just the effort that you guys gave it. You know, it's as close as you can get to qualify for World Cup. I've been there before, so I have nothing but respect for you guys. And what is your takeaway from it all now, a couple of days later, after the game?
I think it's really interesting to draw that comparison because I was thinking about coming on and my mind immediately went to Bosnia and. The thing is, some people who come from a country that has 70 million people living in it can't quite get how you can be out on Thursday night in Basel singing, celebrating, toasting the team, being so full of pride, yet you've not qualified. And you're absolutely right. It's the perspective. When I was a kid, 1982, I was 5. I can't really remember. You know, I certainly can't remember every second of every game from 82. 86, I can remember every second of every game. And I thought, well, we'll be there again. And then we just weren't. We went through some horrible periods where we didn't score for like 900 minutes. You know, we've had some really bad times. And the last, 6 years as manager, but the last four when things came together under Michael O'Neill, it's about so much more than football. It's about memories. It's about being able to turn around to your dad and your grandfather and say, hey, we've got stories now too. You don't need to keep talking about when we beat Spain in 1982 because we can tell you what it was like to go to the Euros in France. And even this campaign, we went into that group and yet again, Asmir, everybody said, well, you get Germany, Czech Republic, Norway, Azerbaijan are actually quite good at the moment. You're going to fail. And we finished second with a game to spare. And we went into that playoff. And listen, you know, the Switzerland side, apart from up front, are absolutely sensational. Defensively, they're world class. And the only reason we didn't take it extra time, and who knows what would have happened, was one of the most inexplicable penalty decisions you will ever see. So the second leg performance in particular, I thought we were the better team. Second half, so, so proud. And it's really hard to put into words. That, you know, it seems to fly in the face of what sport's about in many people's minds, that, yeah, will you win? It's not really. It's about so much more. So disappointed it won't be going, but so proud of what Michael Neal's done. And we clapped every player off that pitch, cheered every player off that pitch. The Swiss fans booed a substitution. And I thought, I'm so glad we don't do that, you know. He had a terrible game up front and they booed him off. And I think, with Kyle Lafferty in the bench, he hadn't scored in 6 games or 7 games. yet we were disappointed he didn't get 10 minutes on the pitch, you know? So there's a togetherness that comes with it. You've definitely experienced, of course, with Bosnia, that I experience all the time in Northern Ireland. It just makes you so proud. It transcends the results. It's about community and progression, and it's about family. And do you know what, Asmir, I have to say, like, we're very close-knit. So even the journalists and the players, it's a bit of old school. So I know Michael O'Neill quite well. I've been at Carl Frampton fights with him, and we've had a drink, and he's met my mother, you know. And Chris Frampton and I talk quite a lot. And with to see them cry is really difficult in the pitch. And I had to actually tell the commentator in Five Live to keep going for an extra couple of minutes just to gather myself, you know. You feel a bit of a silly sod, but you just can't be more proud of him.
Yeah, I mean, I just think everything you said there is the definition of international football. And I think when a country comes together and creates that sort of an atmosphere, it's special. It's why I've always enjoyed playing international football. And I think we're coming to a time now where maybe some people don't have the same respect, the same want to play international football. And I think it's a shame, because when countries, you know, small or big, come together, fans, players, the nation, its people, anyone... I think it's a beautiful thing, and I think it's a great thing for sports. So
it's also, as well, just to add that, because I couldn't agree more, with every year that goes by, and you, I remember you had a great quote when you were doing my podcast, which you said, I love football, but I hate the business of football. And there's a lot of people I talk to now, they still support their club teams, and they still want them to win as much, but give them a choice of spending their hard-earned money from their job, the money that they've saved up, to go and follow Northern Ireland or their club team. You know, we had a lot of Man United fans in Northern Ireland because of George Best, a lot of Liverpool fans as well. There's a lot more saying, well, I get so much more joy out of following a team when money's not the issue. I know everybody on that pitch feels what we feel. That's becoming a more rare commodity as every year goes by in football.
Listen, absolutely. I just think it's such a feel-good story. It was amazing to see. I was gutted for you guys that you didn't get through the last little bit of luck that you needed. So hopefully some good things going on in the future for you guys. But let's move on to some baseball. I know you love your baseball. You host, you do a lot of stuff for the MLB UK. So first thing I want to touch on is the recent World Series. I predicted 7 games. It was an amazing World Series, one for the ages. Just absolutely anything and everything you could have. And obviously the Houston Astros beat the Los Angeles Dodgers in 7 games. Winning the 7th game 5-1, George Springer winning the MVP. How did you see the World Series? I had an absolute blast following this. I couldn't get enough of it. What were your thoughts on it?
It's the first time in 2 years that the Blue Jays haven't been there, so it was back to what I'd experienced in the 20 years before that, which was the creeping fear that the New York Yankees were going to win it. It's a horribly small-minded way to be, but I'm sorry, Asmir. That's where everybody else in our division is. Anyone but the Yankees. And every time, I was just like, get out in the wild card, and it didn't happen. Then you're behind, and I'm thinking, no, they're going to come back and win it. You come back and win it, you go through again. And I just thought, oh my God, these baby bombers, their name is on this trophy. But what actually happened is something we haven't seen in a long time, which is the two teams who'd won 100 games in the regular season made the World Series, which is becoming more and more of a rarity. So the best two teams, without a doubt, were in that World Series. I thought maybe the Dodgers in 6, but I felt if it did go to 7, it would weigh favourite on the Astros. And I thought what was amazing about it as well was there was just so many good stories in there. There was young stars coming through who burst onto the scene in the season and made a World Series who could have won it. There was old stars there. There was pitchers that you were saying, I couldn't decide who I wanted to win. I was like, I want you to have a World Series ring, but I want you to have a World Series ring. So there was real depth and real attitude and real chemistry and real stories. And I think you're right. I think we were both watching it, weren't we? And we were saying, let it go 7. It's a World Series that deserves to go 7. And I know Game 7 wasn't the nail-biter we all probably wanted it to be. But in a way, I never mind that, because I always remember the quote, sport's not the theatre. If you want to know what happens at the end, watch a film you've seen before. You know, go and see a band who play the same set list every week. But if you want to not know what's going to happen, sport is what you invest in at the best level. And baseball deserves its credit for giving this close World Series. And you said, right, George Springer, right, MVP. I think Reggie Jackson, the year I was born, was the last person to hit that amount of home runs in a World Series. So you've got to go back to that amazing Yankees team in 77, I think.
Exactly. I mean, it had so many storylines. One of the big things for me, the takeaway, was everything's so analytical now. And I know that's the way baseball has gone. But in the playoffs, it's all about analytics. I think that there's a stud in who can grab the ball and who can go and get the big hits when the time's right. And that's not analytics. That is just the guys being men, showing what kind of players they are. And, you know, that's what the Astros did in the end, because everyone, you know, I was going into game seven and was like, you Darvish, what do you think of him? And that's the thing. He has never been that sort of a player in that key moment. He will help get you to the playoffs. But even for the Dodgers, he wasn't quite what they expected for him when they traded. And that's maybe the difference at the trade deadline. The Houston Astros go and get Justin Verlander from the Detroit Tigers, and he was just a monster all throughout the playoffs.
And there's your difference.
And the Dodgers went and got Darvish from the Rangers. So those little things, you just saw who the big men were. And fair play to the Astros. I'm really excited for next year. We got a lot of things going on there. But amazing World Series. And now we'll get on to your team, the other team in the AL East.
I must just say what I thought was brilliant was I just thought how they singled out Cody Bellinger.
Yeah.
And they stopped him hitting. You know, here's this absolute sort of bright young spark. And they just worked out how to pitch to him and stop him hitting. And he's got another go. What a grind in that is. He's now got to go and almost retune completely for the season ahead, because he's been worked out. And you're totally right on you, Darvish. Because with everything that happened, and I don't want to focus on it, where there was a racial incident, I thought how you, Darvish, handled it was absolutely sensational.
Yeah.
And I he got up there after, you know, it's the second time he's pitching in the World Series, second game for him. And everything said that he was going to have a bad time up there. You know, everything that we saw, and I think it was game four, wasn't it? Says it was going to be another bad time for him. You were thinking this is a really big gamble, and it turned out to be that way for him. I think he went, was it one and two thirds innings he lasted?
Yeah.
But yeah. I really wanted him to go six. Regardless of who won, I wanted him to have a really good night on the mound, and it didn't happen. But again, it comes back to it. Whatever the storylines are, You're absolutely right. It's about one or two men in any given Sunday or any given day to deliver. I think you're absolutely right. All those stats go out the window going into that game. It's like, who is gonna stand up and win it?
Exactly. And I think, listen, Yu Darvish is a free agent this summer or this winter. And, you know, he's going to be a huge asset for any team. So we'll see what happens.
Canada's a lovely place. Canada's a lovely, lovely place for any baseball player, I'd say.
Well, let's move on to Canada and the other team in the AL East, besides the Yankees, of course, is your Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Now, listen, before we get on to the 2017 season and all that kind of stuff, there's one person we have to talk about. I know he's one of your heroes. I loved watching this guy play, and it was an unfortunate incident on the 7th of November with a fatal airplane crash, and a Blue Jays baseball legend, Roy Doc Halladay, passing away. You know, where does he in you're a Blue Jays fan, you know, a diehard one at that. Where does he rank in terms of Blue Jays players and your players? You know, what were your thoughts on this tremendous man?
Well, interestingly enough, I think it was just to mark the anniversary club founded in 77, the year I was born. I think he finished third of the Blue Jays fan list in terms of all time great Jays. Now, you got to bear in mind, This is a guy who, with the Blue Jays, was the absolute leading light in that team. When he pitched, there was 15,000 people more in the stadium, no matter what the record was. And I don't even know where to start, really, because I moved there in 1995. I think it was the year after the lockout. And that's when I discovered baseball. So I didn't even get us winning World Series. So as I fell in love with the sport and had my connections to Toronto with family and what have you, they were only going to ever be my team. So what was I spending money to go and see? I was often spending money to go and see a team who in August were already out of the playoff picture. But there was Doc. I've pitched and seen Doc win at Yankee Stadium. Went to see him pitch and win at Yankee Stadium. I've seen him pitch just about every AL ground and win. And like, he was the reason to spend the money more than anybody else. And I think the stats say something like, for the Jays, I think it might be something like 38 complete games. It felt to me like 380. You know, this was an old school pitcher in the era of relief pitching. And I have to say, I interviewed him. I was writing an article for The Guardian, and I got to interview Doc. And I went over and I met the press guy, and he took me around to the home dugout to practice. And he said, "It's okay, Doc's going to come out and do an interview with you. Do me one favour, will you?" And I said, "Yeah, anything." He said, "Put your coat on." And I said, "But it's 28 degrees. That's why I have to put my coat on. And he said, because you're wearing a holiday jersey and he's going to feel really weird about that. And it totally forgot that I put my holiday jersey on to go and interview him, which if you think about it, would be absolutely ridiculous. And he was just fantastic. He put up with some nonsensical questions for me and he had a real kind of like chat about what it meant to play for the Blue Jays and give me a real insight into pitching. And he said to me, I said, how can you go as I've seen you do? How can you go and you know, pitch 8 innings at Yankee Stadium and not give up a run? Like, how can you just look at that bank of fans and it not affect you? And he said that, he said, when I'm on the game, he said, I can be pitching at Yankee Stadium and I don't see a single fan and I don't hear a single fan. He said, I literally don't. It's like pitching in my back garden. When I'm on song and I know my pitching is right, he says, I don't see a single person. I thought, what an insight. He was so humble when I met him. He was wonderful. I remember him thanking me for interviewing him, you know, and this guy off the mound, I'm sorry to ramble on about him, but this is a guy who had a box at the Sky Dome and every game you'd have some of his family in the corner and for the rest of it, it would be kids from schools, from disadvantaged areas, little league baseball teams, 82 games a year, he'd fill it full of people from the community. The Jays Kerr Foundation, they give $100,000 to a year just to, you know, just off the bat before anything else. And his Twitter feed the week before, the days leading up to him and losing his life, was heartbreaking. Like, he was out with little league baseball teams. You know, he was with family and, yeah, just a terrible, terrible loss because not only a great baseball player, but, and I think you saw that, didn't you, from all the tweets that were sent out, Ashmeer, from players. He's a great inspiration. He was a great role model for pitchers getting into the game. And he was a great person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of my heroes, baseball heroes growing up, and it's incredibly sad news. He will be very, very missed. And, you know, two-time Cy Young winner, just an absolute legend of the game. Fantastic guy. And, yeah, he will be sorely missed. And I appreciate you for sharing the stories on him. I mean, that's, I know he was close to you being a Blue Jays fan. And, like I said, a devastating loss for everyone. But moving on to the Blue Jays, just a quick roundup of their 2017 season. I think one word, you wouldn't mind me saying that, is maybe disappointed in the 2017 season. I think the good thing from the season, I would say Justin Smoke pretty much had the highest totals in every offensive category. He was probably the bright light. Marcus Stroman has obviously identified himself as the ace of the rotation. But I think just so many things didn't quite go your way in the 2017 season, which you would have liked. What are your general thoughts on the Blue Jays in, over the last year or so?
The weird thing about the season, this clutching at straws, but if you go about 20 games into the season, we were about 500 after that. We just had the worst start to the season. And I think there's a myth in baseball that because you've got 162 games, you can recover very quickly. As you know, Ashmeer, it's not like that. The game is set up so there's not a team that's going to win 140 games. There's not a Man City in there. And even though that you can absolutely, you're a bigger franchise, you're a bigger market, you spend more money, there's a penalty for that that goes back in. And it just means if you look at the last lot of World Series, you can actually just see that. You can see how big teams can be big teams. You can have underdogs and you can have big franchises, but it meets somewhere in the middle and it keeps it healthy on a business front. It keeps it healthy on a sporting front. So you're going into 3-game series. It's hard to sweep anybody to make back, you know, 12 games. And you saw some amazing runs this season like the Indians, but they're really, really rare that you get big runs like that. And I said before a ball was hit this season, I was like, we haven't replaced Edwin, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't see how everybody felt that all of a sudden we were going to produce the same batting numbers without him. And that was borne out, I think, a little bit, albeit more disappointing than that again. I think even if Joey had had a better last season, I think we still would not have produced the numbers that we needed to go as deep as we had gone. But you're right about the plus points. Like, I think our rotation is exciting still, you know, and it's all about next year. We're probably going to build it. We will build the baton around Josh Donaldson and Justin Smoke. And we need to bring in people who are going to thrive in our environment and what the team are like. And well, that's absolutely, we're fine with that at the moment in terms of his contract. He's wonderful. He's more than just what he does in the mind. He's an inspiration. And he's, you know, I love his whole height doesn't measure heart. He's so small and he plays with a chip on his shoulder. He's actually got his whole clothing range, height doesn't measure heart, which I really love. He added it in the side of his boots. And he's kind of like, in many ways, he's definitely, the when, as Joey Bats goes, Stroman is the guy that everyone wants in their back.
Absolutely. Like I said, you have an ace, you have a superstar in the lineup. So you have some really nice pieces going forward. And I hope they can just help the lineup a little bit more, because I don't think Kendrys Morales and people like that were quite the substitutes for Edwin Encarnacion as people expected. So we'll see what happens. Crazy off-season ahead as always. But I know that on Fighting Talk, you love to quiz your guests and your public and your audience. So we have a surprise for you.
I wish I had the sound effects that Colin has in Fighting Tour, though, because that would really... Maybe I'll pop them in the edit.
Maybe we will. It's an MLB pop quiz, the first time ever in a season of sports where we have done this to a guest, and we thought you were the right person for such a challenge. So,
excellent.
I'm going to give you three questions, and just three random questions, and hopefully you will show us how good your baseball knowledge is. They are tricky, though. So first one.
I'm terrible.
Whose baseball card sold for a record $3.12 million at an auction in 2016?
In 2016, okay. Well, you have to be dead, don't you?
It's good. Yeah, it's a clue.
Do you know what? I know the answer to this.
Should I give you a multiple choice?
Don't give me any clues. I'm not going to get the name exactly right.
Asmir literally looks like Christmas is coming early.
It's a player from over 100 years ago, isn't it? It's a player from way, way back. It's not like a Babe Ruth or anything. It's way back. Is it Wagner or something? Wagner?
Very well done, Colin. Honus Wagner. Yeah. Yeah. That is incredible knowledge. I underestimated your knowledge. So moving on to the next question. Who holds the major league record with a whopping 59 consecutive scoreless innings pitched?
Don't know. Straight off the bat, I don't know.
Would you like to use a lifeline on this one? I can give you the multiple choice questions.
Yeah, answers. Give me multiple choice.
Steve Carlton, Greg Maddux, Orel Hershiser, or Pedro Martinez?
It's not Pedro. I'd say it's between two. I'll go Hershiser.
Very, very good. You're on fire.
Didn't have to phone a friend.
Yeah, he from the sixth inning on August 30th, 1988, to the 10th inning on September 28th, Hershiser did not allow a single run. So I know Greinke came recently earlier, I believe, if my memory serves me right. I think Greinke came close recently but it was like mid-40s, so...
That is a bit of guesswork for me. That's just from nerding out and reading sort of stats, because that is before I even knew it. But I wouldn't even have known a single rule of baseball when he did that. So I don't think you can give me that point, because I literally just narrowed it down without a guess.
Well, listen, I'm going to let you go on this one. Which player has appeared in the most World Series games?
I would say it's going to be a Yankee, because you're asking it.
Yeah. Well...
So I'm going to say Yankee straight off the bat. Okay, I'm going to say it's a Yankee, and I'm trying to work through who it would have been. It's got to be someone who's there for absolutely ever. Do you know what? I know this because I did it in my 100 Years of the Yankees documentary, which means it's one of the following people, right? Joe DiMaggio, Lou Gehrig, Yogi Berra, not Derek Jeter. Damn, I near swore there.
It's not a bad shortlist, I have to say.
Mate, I had this stat when I made the documentary. Oh, Gehrig or Berra. I'll say Gehrig or Berra. Is it one of the two?
Yes, it is one of the two.
Oh.
50-50, baby.
Well, Gehrig, tragically, of course, retired a bit quicker than me, so I go Berra.
Very good. Well, very good note to finish the quiz. Woo!
Oh my God, Colin goes to the top of the season of sport quiz leaderboard because there's no one else on it.
Well,
but don't do any more. do you know the thing with Berra as well? People say loads of things today that Yogi Berra made up, and people don't realise it. So, for example, and you won't believe this, and I know recently Donald Trump tried to claim he made up the phrase fake, but that's not, you know. This is actually true. Yogi Berra in an interview said, "It ain't over till it's over." Little things like that are Yogi Berraisms, and they were all from him. So when he said them, they then went into the normal vernacular of everyday life, and he never gets the credit for them. And I'm glad I remembered that, because it was one of the things I talked about with his son because when I made the Yankees documentary, Yogi Berra wasn't very well at all, and it was around about that time, and his son still welcomed me up to the university. We travelled up. He showed me about the museum there, and there it was in the museum. So if I had to get that wrong, I would have kicked myself. I got lucky with that question.
Colin, listen, I have to say a huge thank you from Rachel and I for joining us here on our absolute podcast. Pleasure. It's been an absolute pleasure from our end.
I leave floating on the glory of half getting a baseball card.
So our season of sports fantasy league is in absolute full swing. We've had great participation. It's been really fun to interact with all you guys in our league this year. And I'm delighted to say that we have the man who's sitting on top of the table joining us today to talk some fantasy football, the FPL General Mark. How are you, my friend?
Hi, Asmir. Nice to finally get speaking to you. And you've got me on a good week sitting on top of your league. So let's hope I can stay there now for the rest of the season.
Well, absolutely. That's what we try and do in the season of sports here. We get people in the right times. We're waiting for the right moment. And when you're sitting on top of the league, it's a good time to get you in. And tell me, what's been, in the first 11 weeks, what's been your secret to your success?
Yeah, it's probably a combination of things. I mean, I've had a very good start. I'm sitting at 24,000 overall after 11 weeks, which is probably as good as I've ever been at this point of the season. So things are going really, really well. A couple of things probably have gone my way. Picking a solid game week one squad was probably one of the main things. I like to pick a sensible game week one squad without taking too many risks, avoiding the promoted teams and things like that, just with a view to minimising transfers going forward then. So a couple of players as well who I brought in game week one, the likes of Ben Davies, were amazing for me in the first couple of weeks. Another thing I think has helped me big time this season, I've always been a very patient FPL manager, but I've been even more patient than seasons gone by this season. So I wait till Friday every week to make my transfers, and I haven't actually taken any points hits this season. So I've always been an advocate of avoiding points hits wherever possible. And I've gone 11 weeks now without taking one. I may take my first one for game week 12, but I think that's helped me overall by just avoiding the point sets and then not having to make them up. So again, with the going back to patience, I'm usually someone who plays a wild card early. I didn't play a wild card early this season. I waited till game week 10 just because things were going very well and I didn't really see the need to use it. So I held off till game week 10, played it, and in the 2 weeks that have gone by since, I've gone from 89,000 right up to 24,000. So played the wild card successfully, and most importantly out of that, I've got 15 squad players now, which I think is going to be crucial for this crazy festive period.
Well, that's exactly, we're going to get into the festive period in a short time. But these are some amazing tips for our listeners and everyone participating in our league. And I think that's one of the biggest keys. I think I've always believed in that. Make sure you try and pick 15 players that are going to feature on most weeks, because things are going to happen, last-minute team decisions that you won't know about, which obviously when the teams get released a couple hours before kickoff. So you want to have guys off your bench as well who can come in. At least even if they give you a couple of points, you're not going to get any points hits. You're still going to get a couple of points. Make sure they're first-team regulars, and that way you can maximize your points total during the season. So that's one of my tips too, and I think you touched on that, which is important. So I hope guys take advantage of that. But what players for you have been key so far, just to name a couple of individuals who have gotten you the most points?
Yeah, so definitely Ben Davies in the first couple of weeks was superb. I picked him obviously because I knew Danny Rose was going to be out for a couple of weeks at least, so he was amazing. I think he was the top scoring player in the game at one point, maybe around game week 4 or 5, so he was a big help to me in the first couple of weeks. In the last 2 weeks in particular, since I've played my wild card, the Burnley guys have been the heroes for me. I brought in Nick Pope, and I've had Ben Mee all along as well. So those two guys over the past 2 weeks alone have got me massive points with their two clean sheets, and they were both picking up bonus points as well. I finally got Mo Salah into my side as well with the wild card in game week 10, and he's been a player I wanted all season, and it's taken me until game week 10 to finally get him. And I mean, he was 2 goals in game week 11. I was just thankful that I finally had him in my side. Again, Richarlison, another player who I've wanted for a long time this season, finally got him in on the wild card, and I think he got 7 points in game week 11. He could have had more if they let him take the penalty, but obviously happy with the goal from him, and I think he's the best value player in the game this season. I've got Morata now as well, got him in for his goal last week. Although it was against my beloved Man United, I was happy to get his FPL point.
Can't win them all. Can't win. You got to pick your battles, absolutely. But I like your front line, Morata, Jesus, and Harry Kane. That's pretty formidable, and I think you can expect a lot of points from those guys. The FPL General joining me here on the Season of Sports. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Now, Mark, looking ahead to this festive period, lots of games coming up in a very short space of time, as always, very crucial part of the season. Who are your players to look out for and maybe get into your teams for the coming game weeks?
Yeah, I've picked out three. So I've got one defender, one midfielder, and one forward for the coming weeks and going into the festive period. I'll start with the midfielder because I've already got him. It's Choupo-Moting at Stoke. I've had him for quite a while this season. Now, he's only scored in one game week, which was game week 4. He scored twice against my beloved Man United. But I feel that Choupo-Moting's a player who's underperforming at the moment. His stats are very good. He's right up there with goal attempts this season. He's got 3 assists in his last 5 games. Stoke have got good fixtures coming up. And I think he's a player we could see exploding soon, especially for those who are looking for a differential. Maybe if you're down the rankings and you're looking for a player who could fire you up, I think he's definitely one for the festive period and the coming weeks as well.
And he's a midfielder, technically playing as a striker sometimes as well. So that's also good for any player in that position.
He's your out of position player. I mean, yeah, he's playing right up front for Stoke basically. I know that Stoke haven't been doing very well this season, but with the fixtures improving now, we should hopefully see an improvement from them and from Choupo-Moting in fantasy terms. Defender, I've got my eye on one of your colleagues at Bournemouth, Charlie Daniels. He's been a favourite of mine over the last couple of seasons. He's been great for goals and assists, especially in the previous 2 seasons. He hasn't done an awful lot this season yet, but you guys at Bournemouth, you've got a great run of fixtures coming up now. The next 5 fixtures: Huddersfield, Swansea, Burnley, Southampton, Crystal Palace. I mean, you couldn't really ask for a nicer run. So I'm putting my faith in yourself and Charlie over the coming weeks.
No pressure, Mark. No pressure.
I'm probably going to bring Charlie Daniels in this week for game week 12. And I'm hoping he can do the business for me over the coming weeks and into Christmas as well.
Very nice, very nice. And who is your third player on that list that you have?
My third player is a striker. Now, he's a striker who I got rid of on my wild card in game week 10, but I've always had him penciled in for a return to my lineup for game week 12, and it's Romelu Lukaku. I mean, he hasn't scored.
Good, I have him in my team, so this is good news.
Yeah, well, I would advise you to hold on to him because I think we're going to see him come back into the goals again. Now, he's got 3 nice fixtures coming up. Hopefully, Pogba's going to return pretty soon as well, which should help Lukaku up front. As I said, he hasn't scored in 4 games, but I think now's the time to get back on him. I know we should. I've always been a manager who likes to bring in players who are in form, but I think by getting Lukaku in before Newcastle this weekend, we could be getting in ahead of the curve, and hopefully he'll bang in a couple at the weekend for us.
Very nice. Well, I like your tips. I'm going to stick with Lukaku. I've got Gabriel Jesus and Tammy Abraham in my front line, so I'm hoping that they can produce the goods. And I've got Kevin De Bruyne and Dele Alli, so I'm expecting big things over the next few games and a very important part of the season. So listen, Mark, thank you so much for joining me. Once again, guys, follow the FPL General for the best fantasy football tips all over social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And I hope to speak to you once again very, very soon. Enjoy the Christmas period, enjoy the holidays, and hopefully I'll be above you once the new year starts.
Welcome to The Huddle. This is the part of the podcast I don't even think I need to introduce us anymore. It's obviously the bit where you get to put your questions to Asmir. Asmir answers them as best he can, and maybe some of you will trip him up. So Asmir, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, we've had quite a few on Twitter this week, which is great. And the first comes from Vuk Zubik. And Vuk wants to know, how far do you think the Lions will make it this year? Is he talking NFL?
He is talking NFL. This will be the Detroit Lions. I think they have a chance to make the playoffs as a wild card team. They're obviously in the NFC North. Currently, they're sitting with a 5-4 record. I see Minnesota winning that division. So they will get, I would imagine, either a first round bye or a first round home game, and then second place will be up for grabs in that division. But at the same time, you also have at the moment the Carolina Panthers at 7-3, Atlanta's at 5-4, Dallas at 5-4. So it's going to be difficult for them to get in. I think they can get it squeeze in, you know, squeak into the playoffs, but that's about as best as you know, for the best they can hope for.
Oh, I hope Vuk's not a Lions fan, because that's not a very optimistic.
No, I'm not. I wouldn't. I think they can do it. I don't think they will. Sorry, sorry, Vuk.
Sorry about that.
But they can squeeze in. I just think Minnesota, with the team that they have, being obviously a couple games ahead of them in the division, they'll win the division, and then the wild card spots will be up for grabs.
Vuk, it might not be the answer that you wanted, but thank you very much for your question. And Vuk also says, Asmir, thanks for signing my shirt in Charlotte.
You're very welcome.
The next question is from Ivana Garbin. Ivana wants to know, if you could be an existing NFL player for the day, which player would you choose?
I think it's the worst kept secret in the world, especially on the show, that Tom Brady is one of my sporting idols. So I would love to be him for a day. The man crush just keeps on growing.
It's
and
such
growing.
A big man crush, yeah.
Yeah, listen, you know what? It has to be done, obviously. So I would love to be him. If not, you know, I would maybe like to be Rob Gronkowski, or, you know, I like QB, so Aaron Rodgers seems like a pretty cool guy too.
Yeah, all good answers. Ivana, thank you for your question, and it's great to hear that you're listening in Montenegro. Beautiful country.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Olivia has the next question. Which teams would you like to win the Super Bowl by 2023?
Well, I love the Patriots to win it every single year, of course. That goes without saying. But that's pretty much impossible. So, you know what, if I had to pick another team, I like Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, they come to London a lot, so I think we've seen them quite a bit here and build a bit of a relationship with them. I have a little soft spot for the Raiders. They're going to go to Vegas. It'd be kind of cool to have a Vegas team winning it, maybe in their new stadium in the next few years. So something like that would be cool. But obviously my first priority and first option would always be for the Patriots to win it.
How much money would you put the Patriots on the Patriots winning it?
Difficult. I still think, you know, I think this year they have a very good chance of getting to the Super Bowl. If Tom Brady plays for at least another 2 years, I think they have obviously two more years of a good chance of getting to the Super Bowl. So I would think they could still win one or two. I think it's very difficult in the NFL to obviously do what the Patriots have been doing and be successful on such a regular basis and get to the playoffs so consistently and get to the Super Bowl so consistently. So I would imagine there'll be a few different winners in the next few years.
Well, let's hope you don't spend a day being Tom Brady, because that might not help the Patriots.
No, well, listen, I have some good quarterback skills, probably not as good as his, but I could do a job.
But still, it's there.
Yeah.
And the next question is, the final question is from Albino Hasek, who has clearly made the most of the 280 character limit on Twitter, because it's a nice long question. And he wants to know, in the last five games, the pass defense has held opposing teams to 17 points or less after starting the season as one of the worst in the league. Have they truly improved, or is it a flash in the pan?
No, I think the Patriots' defense has truly improved. That's for sure. They got off to a really tough start in the first month, and I think that's generally the Patriots. They tend to peak in December, January time when it matters, and that's obviously the last few games of the season and the playoffs. And, you know, the Patriots' defense in general over many years, what people need to understand is that they're very good in certain spots. They will give up yards. They never had the best defenses, had only really two good defenses in, say, maybe 10 years. But they will give up field goals rather than touchdowns. With such a good offense, with Tom Brady and his weapons, they always expect to score points. So what they try and do is limit the other team, take away their best weapon, and then make them try and beat them with their second or third options and take it from there. So I think the Patriots are getting back into that mold. They're being very consistent. They're minimizing the big plays, the ones that take them out of the game. So they're definitely improving, and I hope it continues.
That's great, guys. Thank you so much for all of your questions. Great questions this week. If you want to put a question to Asmir, we will tweet about this always before the show, but just send them in any time. You can tweet us at Season of Sports. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Season of Sports. And also on Instagram. We really like hearing from you on Instagram. So we're Season of Sports at Instagram as well. And we will get some more questions on our very next episode.
Absolutely. Very much appreciate these questions. They're keeping me on my toes. And I love it. I love the huddle. Great way to end the show. And Rachel, thank you very much for joining me once again.
Anytime.
Like I said, guys, listen to us on Audio Boom, iTunes, Spotify. Please leave us a review. That means a lot to us, either in a positive or negative way. Love hearing from you guys. And we'll be with you again very, very soon.